Look, zombie takeout. I came in after Lupin and found this terrible podcast. What shall I do?
And welcome to episode 453 of Zombie Takeout.
Zombie Takeout.
The B-Movie and Cult Movie Show. I'm John.
Hello, I'm Scotto.
Before we get started, just a few quick things. First off, Scott and I watched the St. Vincent concert on momenthouse.com tonight. We'll be talking more about it on the hearing, of course. But of course. I just wanted to... There was a major snafu with the after party that several of us paid for and didn't get to watch. So I just wanted to put it out there. Maybe don't watch anything on momenthouse.com. Don't give them any money. I don't recommend the service. The concert itself, what we did get to see, was fucking amazing. We'll be talking about that on the hearing. On to some news. Well, kind of news. A couple of things I found that are streaming that are interesting. One in particular for you. Starting off, The Man Who Killed Don Quixote is on streaming.
Is it? Where is it?
I think it's on Hulu. I found it on a few places, actually.
I'm like Googling right now.
So take a look. You'll find it somewhere. I can't remember the app I first found it on. It was this kind of out-of-the-way stream, you know, no-name streaming app I have on my Roku. I don't remember the name of it offhand. But I think
I think Crackle has it Crackle. Free, which is
that was the, that
really
was the,
weird.
Yeah.
Hulu looks like it's a subscription. Well, maybe if you have a Hulu subscription. Yeah.
Crackle is a little weird with what they have and don't have, so I don't necessarily trust it. But if you still have Hulu, it's got to be on
there. I have not canceled Hulu yet, so... Okay.
There's a good reason
not to... Not that I've watched much on Hulu, but...
Hold on to it. At least watch that.
Yeah, definitely. My God.
Another thing that I found on Hulu and watched a little bit of, The Man Who Killed Hitler and Then the Bigfoot. That title... It stars Sam Elliott.
Wow.
And it's not like super ridiculous, you know, a self-aware comedy. It's they play it straight. So we definitely...
Is
this
something we should be reviewing?
Absolutely need to review that, yes.
Okay.
And one more thing before this week's movie, we have some listeners submitted from Tom Norman who recommended Tusk. About Tusk, of course. He finally got back to us about it. He said, sometimes I forget how in-depth you guys go with your reviews, and a few laughing emotes. Now, remember, I did say that you wouldn't like the film if you didn't like Kevin Smith's type of humor. He did say that in the message to me. So, in the initial message where he recommended it.
I do like Kevin Smith. So, we probably left that out, but I mean, I fucking love the Jay and Silent Bob reboot. I mean, his comedies are fucking solid.
Yeah, you're still on the Kevin Smith train, and you didn't like Tusk.
No.
So he goes on. So when you opened up the review, referring to me, saying that you remembered that you were done with Kevin Smith in general, I was like, oh, well, they're both going to hate this. Well, no, because you are, like you said, still a fan. But it was great hearing how tortured you guys sounded during the review.
Son of a bitch. I knew it. Spite, as Willie Lomans would say.
But on the plus side, I think we liked a lot of the same things. I didn't really think very much of the Nazi references either. All right, now on to this week's movie, something much better than Tusk. And it is from 1979, The Castle of Cagliostro. This is not only a Lupin the Third movie, but I am a big Lupin the Third fan. We'll get to that. It's also Hayao Miyazaki's directorial debut. So, I think you're going to know my rating by the end. But on to the impromptu plot summary, sponsored by Cartoon Logic, turning cliff faces into roads since 1979.
And also brought to you by Global Monetary Conspiracy Theories. If only they were new.
That was disturbing.
Yeah, that was almost as uncomfortable as a scene from Tusk.
Yeah.
Anyway, yeah, it was his nose long. Oh no. All right, so we have the gentleman thief who just pulls off a gigantic heist, a car full of money coming out of the casino. Only problem, it's all fake. And despite, of course, not having a really close look at it, our hero is can determine that it's all junk. So of course they make a nice spectacle of it and just throw it out, the whole car, and I'm surprised more people didn't stop for That's a trope in like a lot of the 70s movies of people throwing money out, you know, like Dog Day Afternoon and
I did
stuff.
enjoy the stream of money flying back from the car, though.
Yes. So they decide they're gonna go to the source of this. I'm not really sure why, but I think you, after a while, you learn to not ask why as you
No.
go along with this. It just kind of does. And
Lupin the Third is definitely style over substance, but it's so much fun.
so they're on their way, and of course, they meet a princess who's in a wedding dress. It's a total Smokey and the Bandit thing where they you know, she's the runaway bride and you know, who is gonna marry one of the villains, but she managed to escape, and they have, of course, a nicely 70s car chase with the music and everything, and you just know what you're getting into as soon as you're into this because you are fully immersed in this. First, I didn't realize this was made in the 70s. And I was like, are they just like harkening back to, you know, that time? And then I had to like pause and look it up. Oh, no, this is 79, maximum 70s. So he manages to rescue her for a bit. So then, you know, they exchange some pleasantries. She gives him her ring, which of course is a MacGuffin, and or half a MacGuffin, and gets captured again, of course, because you know the movie's got to move along. So he of course is determined to rescue her because he doesn't divulge this until much later on that he had seen her before. He had met her 10 years earlier. I'm not sure what the age difference is exactly,
Well,
because
he
she was
said
very young 10 years
she was
earlier.
9 when they first met.
Yeah.
So, yeah, she was 19. And I'm assuming it was early in his career. I'm gonna say he's early 30s in the movie. Probably
Wow,
early 20s at the, when they met.
so he was in his early 20s.
Well, no, nothing happened when he's
That's
when
true.
she was
That's true.
nine. He didn't, and nothing happened in the present of the movie. She fell for him. He didn't lay a hand on her.
Very true. He was a gentleman all the way through. Much more interested in
Money.
well, that's true.
And in the anime, and this is, and I'll get to some trivia in a minute, but when you're done, but Lupin is always a little bit of drooling over Fujiko in the anime.
Right, that's exactly what I was gonna say. He was much more interested in Fujiko. We have a number of attempts to break into the castle, a number of showdowns between the nemesis and the and our hero, and really they of course we believe he's dead, and of course he isn't, and they stage the evil wedding, and that is really where of course it all comes to pass, and hilarity ensues.
And they're of course also chased and end up working with Inspector Zenigata slash Corso.
Oh yeah, Zenigata. I should have put that in. He's the oh man, what's the he's
Interpol.
the Clouseau
Yeah, he's the closer.
of the story. And really the Pink Panther originally, I think, was supposed to have been more about the thieves.
The original Pink Panther with David Niven was about
Yes.
the Pink Panther, the thief. And that was a huge influence on Lupin.
It was supposed to be Niven that was the lead, and Clouseau was just supposed to be the nemesis, and they just wound up saying, well, let's just make a movie about Clouseau.
Well, they did make a one with David Niven, like in the 60s. I think it was 63 with Niven as the Pink Panther.
Right.
And that was a big influence on Lupin. Lupin the Third began as a Japanese manga series written and illustrated by Monkey Punch that launched in 67. The title character, Arsène Lupin the Third, was inspired and is claimed in the series to be the grandson of Maurice Leblanc's fictional character Arsène Lupin, a gallant and famous outlaw able to outsmart even Sherlock Holmes. Lupin is a gentleman thief who announces his intentions to steal valuable objects by sending a calling card to the owners of the objects in question. In other versions of this, there have been, and I'm kind of cribbing my sequels and remakes, but there have been six series overall of anime and a number of movies since the late 60s. I think the anime started in maybe 71. And he's usually a lot darker. In other works, he occasionally works with Goemon and Jigen, his sidekicks. And they were changed to conform more to Miyazaki's concept of a hero and remove the apathy from the story. In the original, he's lecherous and scheming. He instead of driving the Fiat, he drives in this movie, he drives a Mercedes-Benz SSK because it was, quote, Hitler's favorite.
Wow.
Yeah. It goes a lot darker. I'm currently catching up on the latest series, which was from 2018. It's still very comedic. It's not as dark as the manga. The manga was, he's very evil in the manga. But it's still a bit more serious and darker than this. But going back to the beginning, I loved the exaggerated run from the casino. They were like hurtling over things in slow motion.
The soundtrack really brings you in right away. It's very...
Yeah.
Henry Mancini-esque.
The theme song is... Lupin's theme songs throughout the years have always been very Bond.
Yeah, there's a lot of Bond. And, I mean, the 70s and Bond. I know Bond is really a 60s thing, but the 70s, it just so romanticized it. And the soundtrack from those Dirty Harry movies where you get, like, the jazz kind of thing going.
This is extremely 70s. I should mention... I don't remember when I discovered Lupin. It could have been as a kid because there were those anime that were brought over early, like Star Blazers and Speed Racer and Battle of the Planets that were dubbed for kids in the 80s. Mm-hmm. Lupin may have been in that bunch, or maybe I discovered him in the late 90s when I got into anime proper. But I've been a fan for years. I forgot about him for a long time until 2018 when the new series launched, fell back in love with him again. It's nothing original. It's a classic heist story.
Yeah.
But it's just so fun. The characters are just a blast. And apparently Cagliostro, where the castle is a country. But the cops there speak Italian. The name is clearly Italian.
And there's kind of references to France and
It's so generically it's European.
It's Chris Lambert.
Yeah, exactly. also, right before one of my favorite parts of the movie, the Fiat that Lupin and Jigen, his sidekick and marksman, are driving in, it has a flat. And Jigen gets out to fix it while Lupin is just lounging on top of the car. Got a kick out of that. And then the chase scene, which is just amazing for an anime chase scene. Lupin's driving up the side of a cliff at one point. I love the detail on the Fiat engine. We get a shot of the back of the car. He shows the engine beautifully detailed. Loved it when the car that the bride was in was falling apart. Just love it when it was animated and detailed. Of course, Miyazaki is a genius. Also, I like that he didn't withstand the fall without injury.
Right. They're very selective as to when he would be hurt versus when he would not be hurt. And then sometimes he should have been dead, but he was hurt.
He's superhuman, but he does struggle. Yes. He's not just completely bulletproof.
Right.
Loved the ruined castle background and just the contrast between these beautiful realistic Miyazaki backgrounds and these very classic cartoonish characters.
Yeah, my favorite was the interiors of the castle. Mm. Just amazing. Just so much detail in the paintings and the trim. It just really jaw dropping, mm-hmm. especially for 79.
Yeah, yeah.
You're just not expecting like this. Wait, what?
This is by Miyazaki. It's called The Master. Also, just the characters. There's Jigen, his main sidekick and marksman. Goemon, the samurai, the Ronin samurai, who for some reason works with these two thieves. And Fujiko, the femme fatale, who's usually competing with him. Jigen is just such a great curmudgeon. And such a great...
I would have liked to have seen more of those two.
Yeah, like, yeah, they were a little underused.
They literally just had them sitting there for like a good...
Yeah.
Tenth of the movie, you know, not doing anything while he just was on his own in the castle.
Jigen and
I assumed Goemon. He was going to let them in when he snuck in somehow.
They were a little underused, but I just love what a foil because, you know, Lupin is the classic fast-talking, you know, Lothario. And Jigen is just this curmudgeon who just exudes, yeah, fucking right.
Especially the samurai. The samurai hardly even knew he was there.
Goemon shows up to just cut things in half that a sword should not be able to cut in half.
Right.
That's really his purpose. And to just be ridiculously stoic.
He had maybe two scenes of the whole movie, I'd say.
And Lupin himself. I love the balance he has between just being utterly goofy and then turning on a dime and being deadly serious.
Yeah.
You never know which way he's going to go in the moment. I did think it was a little odd that the Count's butler was green.
Jodot.
Was that his name? Okay, I didn't know the reference. Okay.
IMDb doesn't have it spelt with a T, but on the subtitles I watched, that's why Waiting for Jodot was one of my titles.
I watched the dub, so I didn't quite catch his name. But he was green, which I thought was odd, especially in a Miyazaki piece. But I love the extended arms on Cagliostro's goons.
I'd say his Jodot, like, he reminded me of some of the characters from Tokyo Godfathers in a way, the way he's drawn.
Yeah. Also, odd thing that they kept calling Lupin Wolf. Which is not normal in the anime series. He's just Lupin. I know it means wolf, but
yeah, I was gonna say
they don't usually call him Wolf. So that was that was a Miyazaki thing. I'm not sure why, but yeah, loved Lupin going through all the gears in the clock tower. They try to swim into this clock tower, and he can't quite swim up this waterfall. Yes, he swam up most of a waterfall.
Yeah.
It was a Minecraft thing, you know, water elevator. But yeah, so he doesn't quite make it, goes through all the gears of the clock tower. Loved the animation on that.
It's strange because, I mean, on one hand, they're going very 70s, and then all of a sudden it becomes very modern times.
Made in 79, but yeah.
It started to remind me when they got to the weird cult thing in the end. It kind of reminded me of the later Pink Panther movies where Dreyfus goes insane and pretty much becomes a Bond villain himself.
I mean, and those were actually the later Pink Panther were 80s, right?
Ah, no, I think.
Okay, it was 70s. So yeah, they could have easily been biting off of it.
I'm trying to remember when Sellers passed.
Oh, yeah, he passed very early in the 80s. That's true.
Yeah, he did.
They replaced him in, like, 85 for, like, the last one that was horrible. But
They did a couple.
Were there a couple without him? Okay.
Well, there was one where it was kind of, like, a lot of scenes. I think they had been working on it a little bit. Okay. And then I think that's the one that ended with, like, Roger Moore.
I know there was one where they recast Clouseau.
His son, yeah. Like, the guy from Soap.
Okay, yeah. Also liked the fight between the castle guards and Zenigata's men. You have these, you know, castle guards with these poles and a bunch of cops with shields just clashing. And Zenigata just getting caught in the middle of it.
Which, now that you bring it up, that does fit with the modern times thing, because that's more of like a Keystone Cops. Mm-hmm. Just utter chaos going in all directions.
Also, my favorite sequence, Lupin running across the castle rooftops. He's trying to be all sly to get into the tower using this, you know, rocket, this little handheld rocket. I guess it was going to pull him into the window or something.
I kept expecting it to go off like a Wile E. Coyote thing where he just gets shot up into the air.
He drops it. He's on this slanted roof. He drops it. He reaches down. He loses his balance, runs down this curved slanted roof, jumps off the edge, like flies about 20 feet in the air. Just steps on the tip of this one tower, flies another 20 feet into this edge of the tower that he's just barely holding on to. Also in that scene, when he's trying to light the rocket, the detail on the lighter not lighting was incredible. As a former smoker who smoked for 20 years and was up close and personal with a lot of lighters that didn't light, the details were incredibly realistic.
I lost my thumb for one of those that wouldn't go.
Now, the Count's light and shadow monologue was a little much. Like, the Count is arch. I mean, he's meant to be arch because it contrasts with Lupin. But the light and shadow monologue was a bit excessive.
I found there were a lot of scenes where, when there wasn't action going on, I found myself kind of, you know, drifting from it. And maybe I should have watched this dubbed rather than subtitles, because this is just more of a roller coaster, you know, have fun with movie rather than reading the subtitles and actually thinking.
And the dub is actually really good.
Yeah.
The characters nail it. Loved seeing Lupin and Zenigata team up. They do it all the time, but I always love to see it. You know, it's a regular thing that they, at least once a series, will end up teaming up for a short time. Loved all the details on the skeletons in the dungeon. We talked about this. The counterfeiting ring sounds like the stuff of modern conspiracy theories.
Oh, yeah. That was, I'm glad it was brief.
Yeah.
But like when they're like, and these people did this and caused the Great Depression. I was like, oh my God.
Basically, the Count pumps out all of this incredibly real looking counterfeit money in order to take over world banks and world governments. I did like the fire plan to escape the dungeon. You know, they lit a fire down there and got, you know, attracted the castle fire brigade and just snuck out. That was a nice touch. Also enjoyed Fujiko going all paramilitary during the escape. Because she's the governess. She's there undercover as the princess's governess. And as soon as like Lupin is discovered as soon as she knows Lupin's going to get her out or needs help getting her out, she just immediately is wearing camo and throwing grenades around and carrying this giant gun. And then later during the wedding, she's, you know, once again undercover doing this newscast, but then suddenly pulls out a gun and starts shooting the guards while doing the newscast.
And of course, the point of her doing the newscast was to broadcast the evidence that they kept trying to cover up
to reveal the
about
count,
the conspiracy.
Loved Zenigata crashing into the castle to rescue Lupin and Fuji. Because they take off initially in the Count's auto gyro, basically like an early plane. Lupin falls and gets captured again. Zenigata has basically
steampunkish kind of Zeppelinish plane helicopter.
Has to crash it into the castle to rescue them. And as they're rescuing him, Lupin drops from the auto gyro on fire toward his car, which being driven by Jigen, and Goemon's on the roof with his sword, holding his sword sheathed. He just pulls it out very briefly, cuts off Lupin's suit that's on fire, and puts it back in. It's a classic thing with samurai, you know, that one fluid motion. You draw the sword, do what you need to do, and put it back in one motion. He does that, but cuts Lupin's suit off in the process. loved the Lupin mukbang, as I'm calling it, when he was recovering. He ends up recovering from he's almost killed by the Count, and he ends up recovering in the caretaker's shed, and they bring him food, and he's just shoveling this ridiculous amount of food down his gullet.
Yeah, what was that? That he wasn't supposed to drink as much of it as he should have, or...
I vaguely remember what you're talking about. I think it's some kind of wine or something.
Right, and he, you know, like, you just do a little at a time, and you're like, oh, I'm gonna have it all.
Oh, yeah, no, it was some kind of cure-all. He just chugged all of it, and it was, yeah, not good. also enjoyed what a mess Zenigata turned into after being taken off the case. Of course, he has to be taken off the counterfeiting case because he's cracked it, and, you know, the cop, his superiors are corrupt, and he's just got a pile of cigarettes in an ashtray and bottles everywhere, and he's like leaning back on his desk. Loved that.
The implication was, of course, that the Russians have purchased counterfeit American dollars, mm-hmm. and the Americans have, you know, can't purchase counterfeit rubles.
I gotta say, even in the 2018 series, everybody still smokes. I'm very impressed with that. The Count's headdress at the wedding killed me.
Oh, yeah.
He's got this gothic headdress with this goat on it.
And the Count, like, at first... I was wondering if he was Errol Flynn, or maybe like Howard Hughes, or then you kind of get, maybe he's like David Niven.
looks a bit like him.
Yeah.
Also, when they interrupt the wedding, I loved Goemon's sword cutting through this like 3-foot by 3-foot concrete pillar.
They even did like a nod to the Errol Flynn, like going up the staircase, you know, fighting.
Yeah.
And then I think at the end, like Lupin like turns pretty much to the, breaks the fourth wall and just kind of like waves a bunch atop the stairs and then runs in.
But, you know, there's a moment in the newest series where he, you know, Goemon is, you know, sitting on top of the car driving down the road, same Fiat.
Yeah.
Draws the sword. Cuts trees on the side of the road that, of course, fall right into the road in front of whoever was chasing them. It's just that, you know, cliche, you know, ridiculously powerful samurai pushed to utter ridiculousness. Love how they exposed the Count. Loved the big chaotic fight after the wedding is stopped.
Of course. And, you know, you knew he was... the Archbishop of the Vatican, mm-hmm. which of course would be the Pope. That was a little weird.
Yeah. And then the fight in the clock tower gears between Lupin and the Count. That I enjoyed.
Full on modern times.
Oh, yeah. And you'd think that would be the climax. That would be the end. But no, there's another twist. Because he figures out how to get the treasure. It involves two rings and the clock itself. And, of course, he's escaping with the girl, and the Count stops them and says, you know, I'll let the girl go if you give me the rings. He has the girl in his possession.
Yeah.
Lupin, of course, drops the rings, walks away. She's telling him, no, don't let him have me. And loved seeing the Count getting crushed by the clock hands because he didn't know what was going to happen.
Now, that was one of the problems I had with the movie. Just structurally, they had so many fake climactic scenes that, of course, you knew weren't fake, you know, weren't really climactic battles, because it was like, I mean, there's like half an hour left of the movie, man.
Well, I kind of like that, particularly... It's such a pastiche and such a almost parody of these kind of movies.
Yeah.
That I like that they made it that ridiculous with the false endings. Loved the still shots of the flooded castle and the reveal of the actual treasure. and Lupin's panicked reaction when the princess says she loves him.
Yeah.
Because, you know, there's like a 12, 13-year difference. He just sees her as a little sister. She falls in love with him, and he just panics. Like, his hair stands on and his eyes bulge out.
And he's got to do the whole, I'm a lone wolf thing. I can't, you know, stay around here.
And then Zenigata has these final lines about, you know, Lupin stealing her heart. That were very poetic. Also, the staff added personal touches to the film, including the Fiat and the Citroen, which is the other car in the chase scene. One was the head animator's car, and the other was Miyazaki's first car.
So they're chasing each other's cars.
Yeah. On to the sequels and remakes. This was preceded by Lupin the Third Part 1. It's just Lupin the Third, because they didn't really name the first one.
Yeah.
And The Mystery of Mamo, the first movie. This is the second Lupin the Third movie. There is no backstory. There's nothing you need to, you know, be aware of going in, because even the first episode of the first series, they're all working together, and it's just kind of established that you'll catch up.
I'd assumed the movie before this was The Grandfather, but I'd assume the movie before this was The Grandfather.
I don't get the reference.
Well, I mean, that's the point. He's the descendant.
No. That was a separate character from French literature. Lupin the Third, even the first episode, the very first Lupin the Third, which has a hilarious opening song. It's just the same group working together, pulling off a heist. I think it involves a racetrack, if I recall correctly. But it was followed by six more series, parts 1 through 5, and then one called A Woman Called Fujiko Mine, the femme fatale. 5 anime movies and 2 live-action movies. The latest was released in 2014. I've seen the trailer. It looks pretty good.
There could have been some great live-action, you know. You could definitely easily have casted this in many different times.
I feel like, though, a live-action version of Lupin is one of any 70s heist movies. You know, it's such a pastiche of a heist thing that they've kind of already done it a bunch of times.
Well, they don't all take place in the 70s, do they?
Oh, no, they take every series is modern day.
Each one takes place in the decade that it's in.
Yeah. So, but there have always been these kind of heist movies. So if you do a live action Lupin, it's just kind of a heist thing, you know. I think from what I saw in the trailer, they do kind of nod to its anime roots. The characters do look a little ridiculous. Like, you know, Jigen's got that ridiculous beard. But they do
play Amish.
The 7th series, Lupin the Third Part 6, is scheduled to premiere in October 2021. So I got to finish catching up soon, to celebrate the 50th anniversary of the anime. So it's almost as old as Doctor Who.
You get the feeling that a lot of Americans will just think it's like an Austin Powers takeoff. Because I think they did they took a lot from this in Austin Powers, you get.
Well, I think Lupin and Austin Powers draw from the same sources.
That's true.
I think it's more of that than they borrowed from Lupin, per se. He is that Lothario, except for, you know, Austin Powers is a secret agent, he's a thief, but he's still that classic late 60s, 70s sexual revolution Lothario. So, on to brains.
On to brains.
I'm a big Miyazaki fan, I'm a big Lupin the Third fan, I get a good 5.
I'm pretty close to recommending it. I probably would have enjoyed this more if I had just listened to the dub.
Watch the dub, yeah.
Because then the slower parts wouldn't have been like as, huh, okay. But the action parts really had me in, and some of the animation's really beautiful. So I'm going 3.5.
All right, and what have we learned?
Ooh, the planet 1970s. How did we survive that?
And I learned that Lupin the Third and Miyazaki, much like peanut butter and chocolate, are two great things that go great together. Ironic that I say that when I'm allergic to nuts. And I'm guessing we don't want to do The Man Who Shot Hitler and then the Bigfoot next week. We're taking next week off, right?
I'm doing a strange on again, off again schedule.
Next week off. I forgot to ask ahead of time. Oh, I do have it in my notes, so I did remember there. So yeah, that's it for Castle of Cagliostro until 2 weeks from now, when we'll be reviewing The Last Starfighter. That'll be interesting. Have not seen it since the 80s.
Me neither.
Until then, of course, always remember, never forget, wherever you go in life, there you are.
There you are. Zenigata.
Yeah, I'm ready. Go.
And Zenigata Devita.
Okay, you just got an update.
All right.